Feel that the members the minister and the entourage from the department are visitors. Can we stand up and remember one of our little girl who was killed by the boyfriend, who baby Jehels, who's a boxer from East London, Mr. Kidd. Yes, so rest in peace. When you are ending this month of a woman, things which are happening to us as mothers, we don't know where can we put our kids. You know that it's not only her friends. We've got about 2 to 3 girls that are got lost, found raped, found burnt. We don't know what's going on. I do remember whenever also when one had this 16 days of activism, that's why some of our leaders said it was like 360. But come December, the scourge and the rate of rapes and killings of women, sisters, mothers, our grandmothers, others are being accused that witchcraft, especially in my area. I don't know what is going wrong with some of men folk. Today we have one item in the agenda. We did put this in our program, which we are about to finish the program which we adopted until December. We're prioritizing all what our department in our APPs briefed us about, and when we're doing debates also. So I'm suspecting that when we adopted the program, we're saying that one to be part with the department. It's a new department. We don't want to think that we know all, but we prioritize things that at least we must be briefed on, and especially those who are having something to do with our bills, the legislation. We don't want that our minister come to us and that let's split the NCOP to fast track the bills. NCOP, they are becoming very angry with our ministers. So as this department, all what we've been given and told, we want to fast track even before we take the oversight. So today we are having agenda in front of us. Let me take this opportunity to thank Minister. I know that Tuesday we as a cabinet ministers have subcommittees. I've seen this parliament that is either you are there, the deputy is here. Thanks to prioritize the committee, especially once it's a new committee. And out of your schedules, you prioritize us. We'll understand the days you are not having a chance to come to the committee. Because this is the committee of parliament, minister have got also the executive meetings that they must attend, but when they are with us, we do appreciate. Honourable members, can we adopt the agenda in front of you? Thank you. Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. We move that we adopt the agenda as presented.
Thank you, Honourable Member. It's the point. Honourable Member Ward.
Yeah, I second the move.
Honourable Minister, oh, first of all, do we have apologies? I'm sorry. Before I ask apologies.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chair, Committee, Secretary. Yes, Chair, we do have an apology from the Deputy Minister. She is off ill today. We also have an apology from Mr. Mshongo and Mr. Haber. They will not be attending the meeting today. We also have an apology from Dr. Samgelo Mashobo, the content advisor. He's away. Is graduating this week. And we also have an apology from Mr. Gomley, the other college advisor. He's away on the strategic plan for the NCOB. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I accept all the apologies. With my pleasure, in the pleasure of the committee, to you, Honorable the Minister. We did receive the documents in time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. good morning to honorable members. We are meeting today, as the Chair has alluded to, after a month-long program highlighting the position in society of women, mainly as a symbol of the fight against patriarchy in our society and ensuring that there's gender equality. The unfortunate incidents which happened, like the one the Chair referred to, a couple of them this month, a student here at the University of Cape Town and many others still show that our strategic objective to build an unsexist society is still a dream which we have to fight for so hard in all what we do. So we yesterday were entering this new month, which is the Heritage Month, and we launched it in Tshwane yesterday. And as we launched it, we shared with everybody who was there that this year Heritage Month is going to be the main day. It's going to be in Siyana District in the Northern Cape Province in Upington. And one of the main reasons for that is that that part of the country still have a sizable number of the foremost indigenous people in this country, the Kore, the San, the Nama, and so on. So it's quite important that we had to look back and go there, especially when the United Nations has declared this as the year for indigenous languages. So we thought that it is important. It's our duty that we ensure that the language people do not and their language do not become extinct in our society. You'd notice that the government, in its own coat of arms, primarily would have the foremost indigenous people, the core in the sun, which is one way of emphasizing the point that it's an important part of our lives. When last month the AU decided that beyond the official languages, which you will find in multilateral institutions, English, French, what, Portuguese, Spanish, now it's going to be added Kiswahili, which is an African language. It's going to be for the first time, they are going to have an African language adopted as an official language in an institution, a continental institution like this follows in the footsteps of the cabinet in South Africa, decided that through the Department of Basic Education, Kiswahili will have to be taught in schools to ensure that indeed we live to what we preach all the time, that people should be proud of who they are, and they should promote and develop their languages, and so on and so forth. So we're looking forward to it, because we have a whole program, for the whole month, not only for the 24th, which I think from the government, from the department's point of view, would be glad to share it with the honorable members, because some of those activities are happening in your own constituencies, so it would be important that the members are informed about such programs. But coming to today's program, Chair, about the South African Cultural Observatory, SACO, the copyright and SACO's own research outcomes on the contribution of the sector to the GDP and so on. But just firstly about SACO itself. We established SACO. We felt that there is a lot which is happening in what is called cultural and creative industry. But what is happening is not captured scientifically. People will say, no, there's a lot, people get a lot of money, and the sector is generating, revenue and so on, but without actually quantifying that in a scientific way. So we thought that we needed to have a research project as a then Department of Arts and Culture, which would be a world class project, which as we were thinking then would be a point of reference by everybody on authentic data on the sector itself and the industry. Those were the lofty ideas we had when we thought we needed to have this happen. Because we're feeling that there's injustice visiting creatives, that their work is not registered anywhere, their contribution is not registered anywhere, and as a result, people take for granted this sector. They just think that this is a sector of people who jump on stages and dance and sing, without understanding the actual contribution of the sector, both at the level of culture, for culture's sake and for art's sake, but also economically, its contribution. So, a few years down the line, this was 2015 when we established SACO, South Africans are much clearer about the contribution of the industry into the GDP. And that makes us happy. Our lofty idea to have it as a world-class outfit seem to be realized now, because this year, for instance, the United Nations used the research from SACO on the industry itself. So it is in line with what we said we want to do with the industry. We said we wanted to professionalize the industry. We wanted to focus on upskilling the industry, because the data we'll get from the research will point us to where we need to invest, as it were. And in that process of professionalizing it, we can boast that in government, say for other institutions which work with other departments, we are one of the main spender for authentic data through scientific research we have in SACO. So that's how SACO Chair came about. In terms of specific things and research projects which they've undertaken, they would be able to deal with that. But I thought I would have to say a thing or two about what has been raised by the committee which you wanted to discuss with SACO, the copyright bill. And say that the process of amendment of the copyright, in fact, it's not only the copyright bill, they go together with the performance protection. That too is pieces of legislation, and they were dealt with that way. So the process started some years ago, I think about 4 years, because at some point arts and culture was not on board. This is the piece of legislation which is driven by BTI, and Arts and Culture came to the fore, and there was consultation, and there was a process of parliament, public hearings, artists coming here, making their input, and so on and so forth. Like any other process of public policy, it went through parliament, it went through the National Assembly in December last year. The National Assembly passed the bills, two of them. And earlier this year, the NCOP also put its stamp on the bill. So just at the process level, that it's a process which is outside of the realm of Parliament, meaning yourself and everybody else, because you had your bite and you did everything. It's now on the desk of the president for him to assent to those bills or not to assent. So just by way of processing a chair, I thought one needed to raise that and say that there's been a lot of issues around the bills, mainly the copyright, and this week or last week, I'm told there was a march also on copyright. But whilst it was on the president's desk, the then minister of DTI and I decided let's find a way of hearing what is this all about, and we called the sector in Tshwane last year. And we explained from the onset that we are not here to change anything, because Parliament, we can't undermine Parliament. Whilst we are ministers, we are members of Parliament. Parliament has dealt with this matter. But we see there are adverts in newspapers and everywhere, there are issues which have been raised and so on. And people did raise their issues, which there were advice from the ministries what, how to go about. For instance, some of the things were said to be, you know, issues perhaps which may be regulations as they raise. But there are two fundamental issues which arose there. One, or firstly, is that because we wanted to hear, people are saying the president should not sign this pieces of legislation, especially the copyright. And others are saying it should have been signed like yesterday. And we said, so how do you as the industry help the president? Because you are divided. So when we were there with Minister Davis, or former Minister Davis, the House was divided into two. Because especially from the side of performers and actors, who were saying that they see this as the end of themselves and their peers dying paupers, as paupers. But there were serious issues with the copyright. For instance, the creative owners and content owners were saying, no, but if you have many exceptions for people with disability, for educational purposes, and also having a possibility of multinational institutions and companies like Google to exploit our work without us getting anything, is a big problem. And we committed ourselves with the Minister Davis. This way, the minister was saying, no, but let's find a way that we protect content creators on that particular one. Others, like people with disability, the chair of Library for the Blind has been on our case over a period of time, that there is a Marrakesh Treaty which without passing this piece of legislation makes it difficult for them as people, blind people, to easily access the work out there and so on and so forth. So that was the thing. And we said to the industry, please help us to deal with this thing. The other aspect is that people opposed, because in the performance protection, people, there is a section there which says that the minister should be involved in those contractual, honorable member, I think also know more about this, that the people are locked into contracts with those who have scouted them and so on. And these contracts make the actual creatives, the artists, not to benefit out of their own work. And you find that people who are presiding over them are the ones who are benefiting. And they say, no, the minister should not come in there, let it be, let the parties deal with the matter. And we're saying, no, our experience is that you get a child coming all the way from Sishiro or Mutanduli or Shoe to Joburg for her talent. And this person is not a legal person. And the kind of contract she gets into or he gets into is made up of legal eagles for the benefit of their clients, not for the artist. And therefore, they are not on equal footing. So we've been on the receiving end as government, because people come and say, no, yes, this person, you saw him, he was singing or she was singing, but he has nothing. In fact, some of them don't even have money to buy coffins. I said, but how can that be? We've seen this person on TV, we've seen this person there and there, in the media and everywhere. But the reality is that they own nothing. Those royalties do not accrue to them and so on. And we said to them, no, there's no way that after having experienced this, there's no way that we leave it to the artist and those people who are more advanced. We are not going to do that. That we made it clear in that meeting that whatever you do forget about that. The government will never relent on that. But that was not coming from artists. It was coming more from people who would administer artists at all different levels, as it were. So I am just pointing out that there are issues which need to be looked into, but we have always said that the industry must help us here, because Parliament has done what Parliament could do, and members of Parliament. So if anything, the industry must tell us. So there was a march now to the President to say the President should not sign. We have been notified that others are preparing a march for the opposite reason, and so on and so forth. So that's where we are, and SACO, will continue to do its job on the impact of these bills in their form or when they are being implemented and so on and so forth. But they will be able to share with the portfolio committee what they are doing and so on and so forth. But as we said, this was our brainchild. We think that through it, we are going to contribute in professionalizing the sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. You know what, when we were listening in the APPs and we were debating, we're not having the insight of it. I'm one person that I don't want to rely to the media. I want the relevant minister to come and tell us when we see marches on a boat, anything like this, people will be asking us, and I can't just respond. So you must bear with us as a committee. Some of us, we believe on information. For instance, these marches, we wonder what it's all about. But now, I'm suspecting even honorable members, even those who like to write, now this is the time that you must write with informed information. Some of us, we don't like this word, people that they don't like when I'm saying, some of us, we don't like paparazzi, but this is a democracy. They are here to write, to listen, to do everything. But with us, I can't just write and I can't just comment on informed information. I'm suspecting when you were putting in our program as these members, we were having interest because we're a committee who's doing a monitoring to this department. But you cannot if you don't have information. Thank you so much, Minister. I'm saying that we are going to have a voice call in front of us. Those who are going to take us to the feeling they must do, you know, who are from the old generation. I'm from Mthatha. I was in Mthatha Rama, where we were asking that we pleaded Professor Anastela Stout to go to the feeling, to watch the feeling. She will be asking that we must be accompanied, and whoever is accompanying us must bring us back home. So I know that in these days, modern days, we don't say the feeling immediately. We just the same feeling. We are saying, hey, this one is supposed to go home now to get faster. With those words, I'm thinking our minister to brief us. Those who are supposed to keep us through, they must have copies in front of us, but also we have the bicycle. And then they will introduce themselves after the minister, because some there are new to our stretch. Now is the time to your teaching.
No, good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister. We have the CEO of the National Observatory who is leading the delegation with Sam, who is a member of the Cultural Observatory team that are going to lead us on the presentation. And I think they have made the document available in time. And the idea is, as Minister indicated, really, Honorable Chair, not to dwell much on the copyright because of its status at this stage, but to take honorable members on the content and the work that they do in relation to the cultural observatory research. I'm aware that the honorable members had asked about the impact, but at the time when they were preparing this document, that impact had not been provided on the various programs. But as we promised that we'll provide that information, they do have it, but they might just make a reference to the three areas that they have done the impact assessment on the Mzansi Golden Economy programs, which include the festivals, the artists in schools, as well as the recent one that they've just done around the issue of the buzzers that are provided to the students. But they will provide that separate report as we get committed, because it's not part of the presentation at this stage. But we advise that they can just talk to it if possible. Honorable Chair, she also wanted to know how much time are you giving us. As you can see, a lot of work has been done. That is a very thick thesis book, but the presentation is summarized. But she was not aware how far she should go.
The committee is scheduled to finish the work at 1 o'clock. When you are presenting, you must bear in mind that the members also will be taking their bite, discussion, clarification. So, as we're starting now, bear in mind that you must try that maybe by 12 o'clock must finish in order that the members must engage. But if it's even before that, you are going to welcome that. Thank you. Leo?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, the DG. Members of the Portfolio Committee, Sport, Arts and Culture, Modern.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you once again for inviting the South African Cultural Observatory Research Project to come present to you today to share with the Portfolio Committee on the work that we do on behalf of the Department of Arts and Culture. Firstly, Ngiyaxolisa, ngoba when we entered here, I actually thought we'll come and greet in person, specifically me, because I think I arrived later with the Minister and the DG. But in the end again, I grabbed the computer and the connector presentation. Ngiyaxolisa kakhulu. Igama lam nguUnathi Lutshaba, and I am the Executive Director of the South African Cultural Observatory Research Project that is hosted by the Nelson Mandela University in Port Elizabeth. I am accompanied today by the research team. It's just a sample of the research team. We couldn't all come here today. Some at the office, at the various institutions that make up this project, and some have actually traveled abroad In fact, they wanted to be here because they missed the previous meeting we had in 2017 with the portfolio committee. So I will be leading the presentation today on behalf of the team. However, I would like to ask Dr. Tapiwa Shumba from the University of Fort Hare, who has been at the forefront of facilitating the intellectual property side of our work, which also deals specifically with the issue of copyright, to come in as somebody who's got the legal background. I do not want to actually spoil that, and the team as well, as we go along. So without wasting any further time, you know, I always say the challenge with doing a presentation of being the last speaker, especially after the minister has spoken and after having given us that beautiful introduction about the South African Cultural Observatory, Dr. Shumba and I are looking at us, at each other, and saying, but I think it's just covered the entire presentation. There's basically nothing there for us to say. So I'm going to try and summarize what the Honourable Minister has actually shared with us and talk specifically to some of the sample work that the observatory has done. So. Minister. So we received the invitation from the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, Ms. Ajabulile Mtia, inviting us here to come and talk to the Portfolio Committee about SACO, what is SACO, which the Minister has actually explained to us, but perhaps I will summarize. Also, what I think which is mostly important for the benefit of those who have not heard about the project before. We've also been informed that we should actually talk about the contribution of the cultural and creative sector in the country, and which we have actually discovered through the research that we've done. I'll talk also broadly about some of the SACO activities, because we're not just doing research, but there's a range of other things that we are doing within the sector. And then lastly, we'll then touch on the issue of the copyright, which Dr. Shumba, my colleague, will then assist us with and take us through. Like the Minister said in the introduction, the reason why SACO was established, and I think perhaps to summarize and maybe also to just add my understanding of it, is the Department of Arts and Culture needed to actually look at ways of how this department can contribute to issues of job creation, development, and bringing social cohesion in the country. And from my understanding, as you can see, I'm very young. In fact, I was born the day before yesterday. In 2011, a meeting with practitioners in the country, arts and culture practitioners from across the different spheres that make up the creative sector, were called into a summit by the department to discuss issues pertaining to the sector and also to explore ways of how we could actually measure and understand what's actually happening within the sector. Because I think the understanding at the time was people, for instance, people who were working in the film industry and musicians and people in the crafts industry had an idea of what the impact of their work is in the creative, or in the economy, the contribution it was making. However, there was no tool available to measure the impact, and the information was not structured accordingly. So there was an inadequate level of information and relevant data on the creative economy in South Africa, and there was no instrument to actually measure, an instrument that could actually be used to measure and understand the spatial context and be able to do trend analysis of what is happening in the creative sector. Thirdly, I think there was also limited data to inform decision making for supporting the sector from a government's perspective. So there was a need, a deeper understanding of the impact of the current, at the time, policies that were geared towards promoting the sector in the country. And I think that's when then, through the Mzansi Golden Economy strategy, which identifies the sector as the new gold, the South African Cultural Observatory was born. So what is SACO? It's a research project. It's not an entity of the state. It's a research project that's been tasked with mapping and understanding and valuing the creative sector in the country. In 2015, the Nelson Mandela University, in partnership with Rhodes University and the University of Fort Hare, responded to a bid, a call on how the South African Cultural Observatory could be operationalized. There were a number of other academic institutions countrywide that responded to this, and we were fortunate enough to put in a brilliant presentation, and were then awarded a three-year contract from 2015 until 31st March 2018 last year. And the project ran successfully for those 3 years. We produced research for the department. We did a number of activities on behalf of the department. All of these was focused on actually mapping the creative sector in the country. So the contract came to an end on the 31st of March 2018. But towards the end of that cycle, again another bid came out, and we then invited the University of KwaZulu-Natal to be potential new partners should we get this project. And we put our heads together again, and the terms of reference now extended the duration of the project to 5 years. And I think perhaps maybe the department saw that maybe 3 years is just not enough to actually see the effect of what it has just started, and which is now starting to actually get so much recognition, not just in South Africa, but from other countries as well. So currently, so we were awarded the contract in June last year. The contract was then finalized on the 26th of September 2018, and currently we are in our second year of that 5 years, and so the project will run until the end of March 2023. By end of 2023, I mean the end of the financial year in 2023. So the project is hosted by the Nelson Mandela University as the lead researchers on behalf of the department, in partnership with now the University of KwaZulu-Natal and the University of Fort Hare and Rhodes University in Makanda. The task, as I've alluded to earlier on, we are tasked with mapping, measuring, valuing, and understanding the creative sector. And the observatory is also a central place for all cultural data and information. As I will go through the presentation, you will get to understand some of the tools that we use to back up the policy-relevant research or the scientific evidence that we produce. So in summary, the objectives of the project is to champion evidence, to influence policy, to share insight, and to build capacity, looking at the current and the future social capital. So in terms of the contribution, now going to the agenda item as presented or as suggested in the letter of invitation, what is the contribution of this sector in terms of the economy of the country? Firstly, I think it's quite important for me to actually explain that there's varying views on how we should actually be defining the creative sector in the country. However, we use at the observatory the definition is prescribed by UNESCO for cultural statistics. And the UNESCO framework identifies the six major domains which make up the creative sector and which we, as the South African Cultural Observatory, use when we talk of the creative industries or the creative sector in the country. So the first three, which is looking at natural and cultural heritage, where your museums fall under, the performance and celebration, where your performing arts and the music and the festivals fall under, and the visual arts and crafts, are more of the traditional areas of what is the creative sector. And then we also then look at the commercial sector of the creative sector, your design and creative services, your audiovisual and interactive data, which includes your film and videos, your internet podcasting, your video games, including online video games. UNESCO, what's the beauty about using the UNESCO framework is that it's like a manual or a guide which actually takes you through how you can actually measure each and every one of these domains when you are wanting to understand what the impact of the work that is being done. And then it also refers to the related domains, which is your tourism and sports and recreation. And I think perhaps the sports and recreation bit of the cultural domains is what may possibly help us in understanding future work. Like, for instance, one of the reports that we've been asked by the department, although when we started the work, we were still under the Department of Arts and Culture, but recently we also, the department has actually asked us to look at the nexus between sports, arts, culture, tourism, and heritage. So the UNESCO framework puts it there clearly in terms of how we should actually go about defining the creative sector. And all of those cultural domains, we have actually produced the research that fits into all of them. So in 2017, the South African Cultural Observatory produced mapping studies, and the report came out in March 2018. We mapped the entire creative sector in the country, and these are some of the findings in summary of what we actually learned about the sector in the country. It's one of the fastest growing sectors in the country, the creative industries. It had a 63, it contributed 63 billion to GDP per annum, and that basically means or translates to a 1.7% towards GDP. And as I've mentioned, there's a growing recognition of what is actually happening in the sector, and through these mapping studies, which were produced in 2018, we found that the growth rate per year, it was 4.8%, which is faster than the rest of the economy, which is, I think, 1.6%. The sector has also employed a total of 1 million people, which is equal to 6.9% of total employment, according to the mapping studies. And I think what's interesting to note about this number is that 35% of these jobs are actually held by young people, which I think, given my not-so-good mathematics, is an equivalent of about 380,000 jobs or cultural occupations which are occupied by people who are younger than the age of 35 years of age. And the concentration of those young people, the 35% of those jobs are largely held in the visual arts and crafts. And also through the sector studies that we've done, we've also learned that 86% in cultural occupations are held by black people. There is evidence, though, that the sector is still overrepresented by whites. However, when you're looking at the demographic makeup of the country, you'll find out that when you actually go through the mapping studies, what we found out is that there's a lot of transformation that is actually taking place within the sector, and that a lot of these businesses are owned by women who are black, and they're owned by young people. And then in terms of the exports, which I will address in my next slide, South African exports and cultural goods continue to grow. And I think this is also backed up by, before I get to that, so basically, when we did the mapping studies, we then zoomed into the provinces and trying to understand who then makes up this 1.7% contribution to GDP. And you will see in the slide that the Gauteng province, the Western Cape, then followed by KwaZulu-Natal, are the major contributors to what we've actually found out through our mapping studies. And one of the driving domains in this growth is that of the design and creative services. I've touched on the issue of cultural employment within the sector. So through our mapping studies, I've mentioned that the sector has actually contributed to close to a million, or an estimated amount of a million jobs. So when we then use the methodology to try and understand what exactly this 6.9 or 6.72% is made out of, so 0.48% of these jobs are held by people who are working in the creative occupations in creative industries. So that would be your film director who's working in a film theater, or a musician who's actually working, or a producer, who's working in a music studio. The 4.2% of these jobs are made up of people who are employed in support occupations in creative sector. That is your accountants that are working in that creative industry, like your film or your music. And then lastly, the 2% of these people who are employed in creative occupations would be working in other industries. So you would perhaps sometimes, so when we calculate occupations or cultural employment within the sector, we also look at when you look at the car manufacturing industry, they make use of people who are actually designing your design in the car manufacturing sector. So that is basically the general makeup or the trident of what we call the cultural and creative sector, of people working in the sector. And then in terms of the transformation in the sector, I think I've mentioned earlier on in the slide that young people are actually showing up, and there's evidence that a lot of them are actually owning their own firms, whether they are running their crafts business, whether they are writing books, whether they are in the performing arts. So a percentage of at least one youth owner is what we actually found. The 45% is made up of youth owners in the sector. And there's also a lot of women, in particular black, who own these businesses in terms of transformation, as well as the percentage of black ownership. So a lot actually has actually happened. If you're looking at the period between 2011 and 2016, when the department started looking at what is actually happening in the sector and trying to understand and value the impact, and also trying to see how then it can actually assist in helping grow and promote the creative industry. So those are some of the findings that we've actually made through the mapping studies. And I think it's also important for me to note that the mapping studies, in the first cycle of the project, were only done in 2017. And for the next 5 years, we're going to be doing them every second year. And the reason for that is the economy doesn't change on a daily basis. So we actually have opted to actually looking at the current status or the of the creative sector over a longer period. So the mapping studies are a longitudinal study, and by doing it on a biannual basis would actually help us to learn and discover what have been the trends since the observatory has started, and what have been the changes or that actually would inform informed decision making in supporting the sector. On the issue of cultural goods in the creative sector, South Africa is not doing too good in terms of the exports of what or the cultural goods within the country. But overall, when you're looking at the total exports, when you're looking at the commodity, total export commodities, we're actually doing quite well. But Sebert is one of our economists in the research unit, and I actually want him to actually give us a bit of a background in terms of how we're actually doing in terms of our cultural goods, and also explain the fact that we have, as a country, bilateral agreements with African countries, and we've got trade surpluses in terms of what we're exporting to other countries. And Sebert, can you perhaps take us through that?
Jefferson, thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members. Very briefly, I think when we looked at the international trade, first of all, we started looking in the first mapping study at BRICS, and we found a very interesting trend in that there seems to be a decline in our trade deficit to most BRICS countries, which is a good sign, with the exception of Russia, because with Russia we are having a positive trade surplus, which is a very, very good sign. So we subsequently to that also did a study where we look at trade in Africa. And you'll see later on, and if you look at UNESCO reports, you'll see that the change in our trading partners has fundamentally changed towards Africa. Most of our trade in the culture and creative industry is actually going towards Africa. We've also seen a decline in our trade surplus, the trade deficit is very, very, very slow. What we do think at the moment, and we are testing it this year as one of the topics, is we believe that there is a direct correlation between the implementation of cultural seasons and the increase in trade in cultural products. And we believe that the Russian example is maybe a good example to say where there was a very focused intervention to introduce our products to the market, that subsequent to that the economy grew. What we've also done is, and not we'll later touch on that, we've also looked at the cultural and creative economies of about 23 other countries when we do our country briefs. What we do know is that countries that are focusing towards digitalization are moving quite rapidly in terms of their ability to link into the fourth industrial revolution and increase their trade deficit. So I think all in all, when you combine this with the fact that we are seeing a lot of trade with inter-African trade, which is really, really important. I also think one needs to be very sensitive about some of the import statistics, because things like computer games, which are very popular, and that also tends to skew the data a little bit. But all in all, I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. I think it's important that we start focusing specifically then also in terms of what we've been talking about, focusing on Africa as almost the next phase of increasing our trade. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, David. So,
thank you. Over and above the research that the observatory produces, I think I omitted this in the beginning. We have what is called the National Research Agenda, which specifically outlines and defines the work that the observatory does. And it's a living document that gets updated on an annual basis with research questions and gaps that have been identified not only by the Department of Arts and Culture, but by the sector as well. So the research agenda, as it stands, defines the areas that guide the work that the observatory is doing. It defines each and every individual research agenda item required to address the research requirements of the industry. And all of these the research agenda items that are contained within the research agenda are in alignment with the strategic and policy imperatives of government, in particular the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. Currently, the research agenda as it stands, it's got about 198 research themes or items that we actually need to look into. And the beauty about this research agenda, because of the duration of the contract, firstly, and secondly, because of the scope of the work that we need to do, we may not possibly get through to all 198 items, because then the contract stipulates exactly what actually and how many research reports we must produce within this 5 years. But the beauty about it is that anyone in the country who's got an interest within the creative sector, who is an academic and who is a postgraduate student, can actually look at this document and see what are the research themes and research questions and the gaps that are identified within the sector and produce their own research, or also look at what has been done and identify gaps and see what actually needs to be done based on what's currently on this document. And we hold various stakeholder engagements countrywide where this research agenda gets inputs from the sector, and we go to rural communities, we go to urban areas, we go literally everywhere the observatory has been called. And this agenda gets updated based on what the sector tells us are the important issues that the observatory needs to look at. So to summarize, the deliverables as they are contained within that research agenda, we've got a total of 110 research outputs that we as the observatory need to do over the next 5 years. And the different types of reports that we produce on behalf of the DEC have been listed there. We've got reports that look at the review of government programs. We've got country briefs, like Sabert has mentioned. We've got policy research reports that we have to produce. Recently, we did a report looking at the implications of the fourth industrial revolution within the creative sector, because I think part of the fear from the sector, especially the people who are not well established within the creative sector, is that they seem to think that the fourth industrial revolution is going to take away what they currently doing, and it's going to take a lot of jobs away from them. But what has been found through that report is that report basically gives us a number of scenarios that could be implemented in order to curb and integrate fourth industrial revolution in what is being done. And it calls forth for partnership between public and private sector to work together to ensure that the people that are working within the creative sector are capacitated well enough to actually respond to the needs and the demands of the times that we are living in. We've also got reports that specifically look at human youth and people living with disabilities, and some of those findings are actually touched on briefly, where I talked about the level of ownership in terms of the businesses that are held in the creative sector. We've got commissioned research reports that range from a number of topics contained within the creative sector. We've looked at the role of cultural policy. So there's a report that we just recently done, which was spearheaded by the University of Water, the state of cultural tourism in the country, and there's quite a number of them. I've actually we've packed some examples of these reports within there, so you are welcome to peruse those and raise any particular questions based on what you actually see. And then we've got the mapping studies, which give us an indication of what's actually happening within the creative sector, as we've mentioned some of the findings in the previous slide. We've got what we call KPI reports, where we actually do monitoring and evaluation of the projects and the programs that DAC puts, or Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, puts money into in supporting the sector, and that's ranging from your festivals, etc. And I will take you through the examples that we've actually prepared in terms of what some of those findings were. We've got, on an annual basis, also a review of the M&E framework. The M&E framework is one of the tools that we have developed as the observatory in trying to understand and value the creative sector in the country, and then the research agenda, which we update on an annual basis. So this is the general or the summarized makeup of what we've actually been commissioned to do over the next 5 years. So those are some of the deliverables that the observatory has actually produced in the past, and some of them we're actually working on them right now. The SA Trade in Cultural Goods, which Sabert has actually alluded to. We've done a report looking at the youth in the craft sector. We've done a report looking at employment of youth and women in cultural education. There's a whole lot of them. Cultural employment, rethinking culture, how much government funding is available to support the cultural sector in South Africa, the role of the cultural and creative industries in regenerating urban and rural spaces. I won't go through that list because it's quite exhaustive and it is contained in the presentations that everybody has in front of them. We've also developed some tools in trying to understand and value and measure the impact, both the intrinsic and the economic impact of the work. So we've got an economic impact calculator, which I'll take you through, the monitoring and evaluation framework, which I've spoken about, and some of the indicators that we've developed looking at the issue of social cohesion, framework for measuring cultural employment in South Africa. And also those policy reports that we've done, and some are still underway, policy reports pertaining to fourth industrial revolution, rural cultural policy, intellectual property in the CCIs with Dr. Shumba from Forte, and the group from Forte has actually championed, and the policy implications of changes in the IP legislative environment and the possible impact thereof on the emerging fourth industrial revolution. So this list continues. Some of the M&E reports that we've produced recently is the one of the Makandi Festival, which took place in Durban in March this year. I think the organizers, Mshamlen, the Development Foundation, was doing this for the very first time in the Etchegwini municipality. I will take you through it once again when I get to that section with, that deals with monitoring and evaluation of some of the findings we actually found when we did the MME of that festival. We've done quite a number of them in the past, the National Arts Festival, the Summers, the Cape Town Carnival, and some of the trotting ventures, the flagships, etc. And these reports are all contained in the SACO website and are freely available for downloading for anyone who's got a particular interest in a particular cultural domain or in a particular report. And we would actually welcome some feedback and comments based on what you find on that website. So, when I mentioned earlier on that we've actually developed some tools. So one of the tools that we've actually developed on behalf of the department is that of monitoring and evaluation of the publicly funded arts and culture initiatives. So when we measuring cultural values, those are the five things that we've actually looked into. And how we actually got to those five things is primarily we looked at a literature review. But also we looked at, so the team went and looked at the application forms that I kept at the Department of Arts and Culture, which the applicants of these festivals have actually submitted in order for them to qualify or to receive support and funding from the department. And some of the things that we actually picked up from those applications, things that these festival organizers have actually expressed as the driving force behind why they actually do the work that they do, the organizers of your Royal Indonis, the Mahika Maikeng, the National Arts Festival. So some of these themes, the first one was the issue of audience development and education. I think it came out quite a lot from those application forms, and when we did further interviews with them, with the people that actually applied for funding to try and understand what is it that they're actually looking to achieve with their various festivals and events. The other issue that has also come up is that of human capital and professional capacity building, and that speaks more to your performing arts. And the other one is that of the inclusive economic growth which I think for most of those applicants to DAC who actually said, "Will you please support us?" That was also a major one because they actually wanted to improve their livelihoods and also contribute towards growing, whether it's their city or their local municipality or the region, and through that also providing short-term employment to their particular region. And the other thing that came out strongly is that the issue of social cohesion and community development. So some of the applicants said, look, I think this particular event is quite important for us because it brings everybody together. We are able to get together as a community, and both black and white coming from different backgrounds and be one. And then lastly, the issue of reflective and engaged citizens is one of the things, or the last thing that actually came up strongly when we actually interrogated the application forms and also with further interviews that we've had with the team. So when we then use this framework, we actually make sure that we take into cognizance those themes that came out. And we've used this M&E framework across all the KTI reports or all the M&E reports that we've actually produced to see coherence and to do trends analysis. And to give you an example of some of the findings, as I mentioned earlier on, that we evaluated the Umakandi Music Festival that took place in Moses Mabhida. So the University of KwaZulu-Natal went to the event and ran surveys and interviews and spoke to the organizers of this event. And some of, just to summarize, basically, in terms of what has actually happened and in more particular the economic impact that the festival brought to the city, that so in the report we found that the estimated attendance of the festival was 31,200 and 23,000 tickets were actually sold, and it generated an income of 3.5 million for the organizers. The festival attracted close to 11,000 visitors to Durban. So people traveled outside of Durban to actually get to Makandi to actually participate and enjoy what was actually happening. 98% came to the location specifically to the festival, and according to this study that was done, there seems to be positive associations with the cultural impact and the satisfactory festival perceptions by both the organizers and the participants. So who funded this event? There were a number of public sector funding, but the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture was also one of the main funders that supported and made sure that this event actually takes place. The organizers overall spent 11 million in making sure that they pulled this off successfully. 14.4 million was spent by visitors who came from outside of Durban, Itekwini Municipality. So this is new money that was basically injected into the economy of Itekwini, and the estimated economic impact of this festival on the local economy was between 19 and 25 million in March. This is a study that was done. Now, there's quite a number of them, but we could share those reports because we couldn't print all of the reports for the portfolio committee today. It would have made it impossible for us to carry all of those from the Nelson Mandela University, but through our secretary of the portfolio committee, Ms. Aja Williams, here, we will share some of those reports, especially the ones that the DG spoke on, the National Arts Festival, which we have done, I think the last study we did there was in 2016, and also the Artists in School report, which was one of those reports that was commissioned to us towards the end of the first contract of the South African Cultural Observatory. I think one of the important things that the research team at SACO learned through evaluating some of these events and publicly funded arts and cultural events that DAC funds, what came out as important from both the organizers, mostly the organizers of the events, is the issue of economic impact, which we really cannot shy away, because from an economic perspective, anybody, most of the people that we actually interacted with, did over and above saying this is for audience development, this is for social cohesion, but the issue of what then, in terms of improving their livelihood, is important. So we saw it important that we developed this festival calculator, this South African Festival Economic Impact Calculator, which is basically a tool that now practitioners can use on their own to do their own economic impact assessments of the various trades that they are involved in. The issue of
that we are passionate about this. You can talk the whole day and teach facts and give us the documents. You did also give us the summary documents. So I'm worried that you may guys talk until we come to the end without engaging you. You were saying also you still have some others who have got legal background. So I don't know, honorable members, because when I'm listening, I'm looking at the summary document and in the main document. Then I was thinking that when you're having a summary, you summarize the big document, but as we're going on, we look at your summary, we look at your document, but the information is so interesting, and I'm suspecting the Honorable Minister and DG, if in that meeting that will be called, I don't know whether, how it's going to be an agenda, not a day, half a day presentation. And I'm not sure whether you're able to summarize what is left, and then maybe if any other people whom are who you are, they are still going to go as far as we have started. My main worry is that these members will want to engage with the discussion. Mm. But so far, I'm seeing, when I'm looking at the time, here in Parliament, we, in everywhere, we're guided by time. So once a speaker took a from 9:30, it's going for 11 now. And mind you, you put valuable information that we need to engage with, and which means you speak alone and won't have chance to entertain and engage the discussion. I'm pleading you, if you can summarize whatever you want to say, you are passionate about it. I'm looking when you are in your summary or also in your main book, you know what you're talking about, and it's so interesting. So I'm pleading even for the members and others that they are sitting here, there are issues they want to engage and to ask. I do understand that what I'm doing, maybe you'll be thinking that to just undermine your presentation, but I'm really appreciating, but the time factor which you have asked for the first time when you want to start, but I was not aware that you can, one person can take such hours. The challenge is that we want to engage with your discussion. I've seen Honorable Martin goes, Don't feel bad, Mama. I'm trying to minimize your input in order that you must not just talk and then the time is off and then you go not knowing what exactly was heard and not we didn't hear. Honorable Masingos.
Thank you, Chair. I'm listening to the Honorable Nati, and I'm very much aware that she's, you know, summarizing the summary. And while she's doing that, there are things that I was not aware of. And they are in this industry that I'm still being very much operational into. So I think with due respect, we would need more time for this sector of this industry to for it to be given more time, maybe the next time, maybe a day, because there's a lot that this industry deals with, and it looks like it is just being given a short time. Maybe I look at it as if it is being undermined. Thank you, Chair.
Also, can I remind our members that we promised that as a committee we are going to go to a weak strategy of the committee. And when you are doing a strategy for a committee, you invite whoever you want to come and present. But when we put this in the agenda, it was out of the APPs and out of the debate. We felt that this is a very important area that we must get information. Irrespective, we were not aware about this much as the Honorable Minister. First time that we were hearing that they were those who were marched and others are still wanting too much. We wanted just information as a committee. So if we can have a few minutes to wrap up in order that the members on what already we have said, they must be take stock and engage in your discussion, asking clarities, but make no mistake, when we're coming back, we'll be having another problem of this committee, which is going to have a strategy of a committee itself. So we'll be inviting you to be with us. So don't be disappointed.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll try and speed up and summarize what's left before I then hand over to Dr. Shumba. So just to finish off on this impact, economic impact calculator, we've developed this because the sector has actually said we can't afford to hire consultants to do economic impact and to produce the supporting documents that are mostly required by funders to say this is worthy of me you giving me the funding so I can do this. So this is a tool that's available for free for anyone who's in the creative sector to do their own economic impact. There's a manual as well on our website that one can actually take themselves through in order for them to understand how to use it and also to do their own economic impact calculator. I've mentioned workshops that we do. This is part of our stakeholder engagement with the sector because we understand that we cannot always do our research from using desktops and literature review and et cetera and all these other various methodologies that we as academics and researchers use. It's important to actually go to where the people are, to where they're actually working and trying to understand from them what is it that they do and how is it that, what message do they want us to actually bring to the attention of the department? And part of that is what Shumba, I think I need you to, this is where we've been basically in overall countrywide so far. We're still going ahead. We're going to Venda in the next 2 weeks. We've been asked there to come and share with them what Dr. Shumba will talk on the issue of intellectual property. Country briefs, David has mentioned, those are the countries that we produce country briefs for. And unfortunately, those ones are not available on our website due to the sensitivity of the information that's contained there. But we do share those with the department as soon as they are required for us to do. That's just an example of how our quarterly newsletter looks like. This is another platform we actually use to share and disseminate some of the findings and what's actually happening, not just at the observatory, but throughout the creative sector as well. I think it's quite important for us to actually indicate to the portfolio committee that 40% of the people that are working on this project are interns. It's students who are working, who are studying towards any fields within the creative sector, and we actually try and capacitate them so that they've got experience when they actually have to go. The UNESCO report the minister spoke about, I won't dwell as much, but here, UNCTAD actually recognized the work that the observatory does, but most importantly, they've recognized the department, they've acknowledged the department and on setting up the observatory, because it's actually helping the country in understanding. And we've also recently been getting a lot of attention in Africa in terms of what we actually do. There's now universities in the African continent who are knocking at our door to say, you are the first cultural observatory in the continent, and we've actually seen the work that you are doing, and we want you to hold us by the hand in establishing this because we think that is very important. Recently, we hosted the Malawi University of Science and Technology, and we are going there at the end of this month as part of that continued engagement in mentoring them in how to actually do this in the African continent. We're also in conversation with Angola through UNCTAD, so there's growing recognition of what is being done, and it wouldn't have been possible had the department not set up this. This is just continuing with the international recognition that the observatory has done. Didi has actually requested that we actually speak about the budget. So I've mentioned in the beginning that initially it was a 3-year project, and now it's a 5-year project. And in terms of what was allocated then vis-a-vis what is allocated now, I think the total budget for the first 3 years was about 43 million. And this year it is 70. And when you're looking at this, and if you're taking into consideration inflation and tax, we're actually doing more work on a smaller budget than we actually did in the first year. But we are actually making it work within the limited budget, but making sure that we achieve our objectives. Dr. Shumba, this is over to you.
Thank you. good morning, and thank you very much. Thank you, Minister, and all committee members. My name is Tapio. My surname is Shumba. I'm Dr. Shumba at work. I am a senior law lecturer at the University of Fort Hare. I studied there. I did my master's at UCT and my PhD at Stellenbosch in mercantile law. I do work with SACO. In partnership, of course, with the University of Fort Hare on the capacity building workshops they do. So what we do generally is we go across the country training and speaking to artists about intellectual property. Intellectual property in general, so it's not just copyright, it's intellectual property in all its forms. That includes trademarks, designs, copyright as well, patents, and performance as well. So that's basically what we do. So we don't only focus on copyright. Just as the minister has already mentioned, in fact, I must say the minister has already touched on almost everything there is to talk about. But the bill is before the president. It's awaiting the president's signature. It has gone through parliament, this parliament, and was passed by this parliament already. But perhaps maybe just if there is need, of course, to engage and discuss, I will just highlight a few key issues about the bill. Okay, so just to start by way of introduction, of course, the copyright is an exclusive right granted by law for a limited period to an author for his original work. That is how much it concerns artists. So it's legislation or law that seeks to protect creativity generally. And in our law, we are protected, of course, for literary, musical, artistic, and sound recordings and other many works. But I think what is key to mention is this point of...
I'm trying to locate time now. I'm giving you 10 minutes.
Thank you very much. Maybe 5 minutes will do.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Don't want that the honorable members, they can't exercise their right. I'll be fired in this chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I indicated, the minister has already touched on almost everything there is. I'm just quickly running through what we already have so that at least maybe we can create a platform for discussion if there's need for any. So, but I think what is, just to continue, what is key, Chair, I think is of course for us to note that intellectual property is also protected in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution, that is the right to property. So whatever bill and whatever law would have to be passed would also have to comply with that, with Section 25. There is an understanding that the bill that the act that we have been using thus far has become outdated, and therefore the Department of Trade therefore sought to review and modernize the copyright law. The memorandum on the objects of the Copyright Amendment Bill provides the following, that is primarily providing the basis for the amendment that is currently before the president. So it seeks to align copyright with digital era developments at a multilateral level, of course seeing the development in technology and science. The existing bill has become outdated and has not been effective in a number of ways. The memorandum says the creative industry is impacted upon, educators are hampered in carrying out their duties, researchers are restricted to further developing research, and people with disabilities are severely disadvantaged by having limited access to copyright. So these are some of the issues, if you would like to put it that way, that the bill seeks to address to try and give educators access. So there is an element of trying to give access in this bill. But also, if you can look at the other objective that is there, besides giving access to educators and people with disabilities, the bill notes that there is a power imbalance and vulnerabilities existing in the industry, and the bill also seeks to do that. So how does the bill do that? The main provisions that I put for you there that are key for you to perhaps maybe look out for. The bill seeks to align copyright with digital era and development multinational level. The provisions of on collective management, collection of royalties for members only and accreditation. So what the bill does is essentially introduces a sort of regulated collection system for royalties for artists. Of course, that is based on the and the critical issues showed that have come up in the industry where royalties were not being remitted to authors and artists. So there are new provisions on the protection of works and rights of authors in the digital environment, the new provisions giving access to persons with disabilities, new provisions on resale royalties. Resale royalties is quite critical, of course, so that when your work becomes is sold down the line, you also get something from which is a new innovation that was not in the previous act. New provisions on the production of copyright material for certain uses. Which is what I can say, perhaps maybe as the minister has already alluded to, the key issue in this bill. The key issue primarily on this bill is on the exception that provides, particularly the fair use approach. In the old regime, we used to use what we call the fair dealing approach, which is a somewhat closed list of exceptions. But what the fair use approach does is that it can show that you were fairly using the work, then you will be protected from copyright infringement. So it provides a new approach which has been used in other jurisdictions. So as I indicated at the bottom there, broadly speaking, the bulk of new provisions provide for new exceptions for copyright protection. Thus, the bill, while it's providing for new protection measures for authors through resale royalties and regulation of collecting agencies, has largely broadened the scope of access to copyright work. So as we, of course, we haven't done deep research, particularly empirical research on this, because we were not commissioned to do that. But of course, as we do our capacity building workshops, we get an opportunity to engage artists and practitioners. And some of the views that we gathered are what we have also put for you there. And I must just say, Chair, that this is not deep academic research or empirical research that was done. It's basically the views, and the views, as I have indicated, they are quite divergent. Those who believe in the bill believe it in it so much. Those who don't like it also very much. And it's quite difficult. It's quite difficult, Chair, without thorough research to actually come to a proper conclusion as to whether you can actually say whether the bill is actually good or bad, I must say. And some have suggested, Honourable Chair, that maybe there could be also a lot of lobbying on the bill. So once that happens, it becomes so difficult to tell whether these ones are right or these ones are wrong. But the crux of the bill, Honourable Chair, is to try and balance between access for economic development and other developments that are necessary, social development, and also protecting the intellectual property of the people that are involved in creation. So that balance, of course, is what is what the bill seeks to do. Others think that maybe it has fallen more on the side of protection, and others think it has fallen more on the side of giving access to people generally to exploit copyright work, which is the crux of the problem. Just to round up in conclusion, Chairperson, of course the main worry from the artists who have engaged is on the new exceptions that the bill provides on access to education and the fair use approach, of which practitioners feel that perhaps maybe that has gone a little bit further in trying to give access as to against their own rights to be protected of their intellectual property. So at the end, it is also critical to note that views on the bill are fundamentally divergent, Honourable Chair. However, personally, in our view, from what we have seen, the prevalent view from practitioners and academics, that the bill could be harmful to creativity and the cultural industry. Thank you very much, Chair. As I indicated, the Honourable Minister has already touched on almost everything that is there about the bill. Of course, he has already indicated about the scope of discussion and whatever action may be taken from here on, seeing that the bill was already before the President and awaiting his signature. Thank you so much.
It's a young doctor, huh?
Yes. Honourable members, now is the time that you must identify asking, by adding, by you must also don't forget that we were going to invite them to our strategic plan, which I'm suspecting they'll be asking that we must be given a week. So now is the time for questions, to applications, input. You must not forget that the bill now is in the final stage with the president. If two houses agreed upon that bill, I'm not sure what is going to do with other people that were given chance to input, and why started to this first house and then the second house. You know that the Section 76, they do their work on consultation. So now we'll be happy the day that the president put his signature, and then we'll act swiftly as a committee. Now the time of the question. In the hand of the Honourable Martin Gosset, Honourable Chairman, Honourable Tom Dake, Honourable Mamabulo, Honourable Stiare, Honourable Malumane. I'd rather call you about your name because I'll end up saying Mamabulo again. and now I'll be having Mr. and Mrs. Mamabulo in that order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. And even though I wish it could have been longer, but the more Honorable Nati spoke, the more it opened more doors. And my question is, in your research, did you go deeper about the legislation of this sector, way beyond, say, even before the African cultural, department got solidified? Because I got disillusioned one time when I tried to get information as to how the Afrikaners got to get their culture so strong, and all those volumes, I think there were about 400, they were all in Afrikaans, and I thought it could take me more than 6 months to really get into understanding what was in it. So, did you go back and really find out how they got it well organized? Because it is very well organized, and we are very far away from really getting into how it was done. And talking about the organizers of these festivals that are supposed to be pushing unity and social cohesion and all that, and the appalling treatment that the artists get to be subjected to by these very same organizers who are supposed to be the vanguard of the artists and their artistic prowess. They treat, I would say, us, we're not part of it. They treat us very bad, and it's like we are there begging. So meanwhile, they got all that because of our creativity. So I think it's time that they should be changed and better people who are really serious into making this social cohesion a reality and genuinely wanting to help in unity to take over. Otherwise, they think they own those spaces and they need to be changed. And I'll just go quick because there's no time. You talked about the sensitivity of some of these cultural diplomacy. You know, I think that there was a slide somewhere other countries, but you just passed it as. My question is, what sensitivity is beyond this portfolio, this committee, that we couldn't discuss it in our country? So, I mean, if it is sensitive, why mention it? Because we should know about that as a country. And you talked about the sustainability of jobs, and you talked about 35% of creatives, and how sustainable is that? I remember that the main people who are really making a killing there would be the producers of this film, production companies, and script writers, which happen to be white, and on top, and there'll be like those who would be running around and pretend to be the bosses, and they are not doing anything about it. So I think your 35% is not talking about the real people who really need to be benefiting from this whole thing, but it's talking about the bosses of the bosses. I'm just finishing. The fair use, Dr. Shumba, I remember we I was there when you talked about it, and I freaked out about this fair use, because and you now adding that it is being used by other jurisdictions. Which are those? Is that South Africa? I mean, why must we follow other people's medicine? I mean, why it doesn't work for us, And the fair use, I will take it because I've done too many songs. A fair use of my song could be just the 3 seconds of the song as it starts. And that is the whole song. And if I can use that, and as an advertiser, and say, okay, listen, this is just the fair use of this. You got the whole song, and people are going to buy into it, and it's going to make there's more money. But what about me? What about the creator? What about all that? And it doesn't work for me as an artist. And I try to engage. After hearing that this bill is sitting with the president and is about to sign something that is going to, bury us as artists, as creatives. And I spoke to different people, others who are also within this sister and others who just hate, me as a person because of who I am right now. And I realized that they don't even know what intellectual property is all about. And some of them said that they were promised that if they sign the bill, there will be no proper burial. They are going to be protected, blah, blah, all that. And it felt like they were duped by whoever was asked them to. They never got into the gist of what is going on within the bill. And those who are the ones that voted for it, we want it because it's going to help us. We're not going to die poor. But they've been poor the rest of their lives. I'm talking about a lot of black artists. And then those who are for this, they know that they are going to make money, and they don't want the ministry to protect the artists who actually don't know nothing about it. Some of these artists signed their contracts under duress, where they wanted to be on TV, they wanted to appear, and be famous, and that is happening today. So those things, I think, it never go to the public scrutiny where, but I don't understand, and a lot of people that I know within the industry, they don't know it, and those whom I would explain to say, no, that's crap. I'm not going to sign it. Why do you say that that is in front of? I said this is in front of the president. He's about to sign it, and we don't know it. So yeah, thank you, Chef.
Thank you, Honorable Muslim. As this committee, we do have contracts. We do have information. When we are getting to a new committee, you are new, but the work has been done by the fifth committee. If there's somebody who's doubting about the public hearings, but what Parliament does have records, those people will meet them there. But so far we're taking what I've been told was you were not part of the committee. But in South Africa, we can't have a bill which is in front of president, that the parliament. When you say parliament, we talk of two houses. But if there are those who are doubting that information is not there, it's easy to get it. You don't have a public hearing without records. So I'm noting what is the contribution of our members and the department. We can protect, we cannot protect, but the information that we are giving, if there are doubts that it's true that public hearings have happened, it's easy as a chairperson to get information, and information is in Parliament.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. So I'm going to be very short, doing it differently. And I'm happy that Honorable Mhlongo was not here, because he was going to tease me that I'm always messing with the department. Chairperson, I just want to get it from UNAT, because she has been saying that they are getting into these countries, other countries now, in terms of arts and culture, as mentors, and also they are also getting experience there. But I just want to check what else and what other benefits perhaps now you think you would get when you are getting to these countries, besides getting experience and mentoring these countries. What are the benefits perhaps? How are you going to assist us as they are making inroads into these other countries? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
And thank you also for the presentation. From my side, I'm just wondering, while there's so much controversy around this bill, why can we not, from our side, as we didn't participate in the anything of the bill, why can we not, from this committee, suggest to the president that we just send back to Parliament while there's so many questions still around, so that it can be further, so that for further amendments and considerations. That's my first, just something that I want to mention. And then I want to, from the legal side, you said that at this stage, it is protected, the Copyright Act, the intellectual property is protected by the Constitution in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution, but we all know that there's also the fact that expropriation without compensation is part of the new with my colleague here on the right, actually I was surprised that he's not that was also something that was should have been considered when you proposed expropriation without compensation, of course if you look at the proper bill and the section in general. So from my side, with regard to that, I would like to know what is the fact, what is the objective safeguards to fair use in terms of personally I think that it will be extraordinary our artists and our writers and our creators this new copyright, and I think that we cannot support it. But the main thing is, what I want to know from you, what is the objective safeguards to fair use? And this was incorporated from the US law, and the bill, for instance, they have incorporated statutory damages in their framework. So what do we do then to protect our artists? And because we cannot allow for our culture to be content to be given away. We all know that the Google and all these companies, when it's put out on the website and they can use it as they want, that the people that will not be benefiting is our local content producers, and it will actually be given away for free to them. So if you can just explain that to me, and also, so, and then I only have a small mark on this calculator. I just want to know from you, it's commendable, but if it's freely used, by how many of the cultural festivals and events is it actually used? And if it's not used by all, if it's not obligated, if you don't make it that people should use it, what is the purpose of it? Because how really you use the, to what you compare it to, what is the, I cannot, I actually want to know what is the, did the information come back to your research department, or do they do it for themselves? But what then is the purpose if you don't use that information that comes? Is it not so that we can also update our databases on and make use of the information? And if it is it not possible that we can develop a similar type of tool so that we can provide data for levels of cultural participation according to your gender and your ethnicity, your disability, your age, your socioeconomic groups and geographical location? So let me have, I'm just curious about that. That's just a second thought. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Malumani.
Thank you, Acting Chair. I thought it was Mama who. Okay, what I want to ask you. Thank you, Chair. What I wanted to ask is that it seems as if maybe there is a complaint, but what I know that before the bill went to the President, there must be public hearings, there must be consultations in each and every stakeholder that is there. But it seems as if maybe the challenge is growing because if people maybe are matching and also, and I don't know whether they, are they given an opportunity to, what are they saying, what are they complaining about, so that it can be looked upon and be addressed, so that that bill can be signed, because the bill needs to be signed. The President cannot sit with that bill that was presented to the public for a long time, so it gives us a wrong impression on that issue of the bill. The other thing that I wanted to ask, I think Mr. Jaifa, in good deal of good deal, when they are saying about those countries, what do we benefit, and what is it that is doing? And you are saying you've got the 5-year agreement, and you are in the second year, which is the second quarter of the second year of this 5 years. Mm-hmm. So what has been done in that, and what is left, so that when you are completing the 5 years, is it complete, the project?
Thank you.
No, it was not a question of a project. There could be a comment, but has been covered by the previous figures.
And sure, that's discipline you expect from young people. But maybe before response from my side, because we want to welcome the presentation. I think it was a necessary intervention by the minister if what we heard from the presentation is anything to go by. It was like the DG said, in the subsequent presentation, we'll then go deeper into issues of impact. Maybe even in that presentation, we'll go deeper into issues of how you are organized, your organizational structure. Just a few questions. What is your definition of youth? Do you have your own definition, or is it within the broader definition of youth? And if you can clarify a bit about your international trade in cultural goods or cultural products. Just more information on that one. My department, my question to the department is, after the SACWA has presented recommendations, maybe, how do you go about implementing them? Because I think they don't just submit reports for the sake of submitting. There's somewhere where this report must be implemented. And then we really commend your intervention. You said 40% of the researchers are interns, people who are still studying. So again, you are giving them experience. You talked about the budget of 70 million. I'm not sure whether 70 million per annum or 70 million for the entire period of the project, which is 5 years. And how much of that is paid to Nelson Mandela University for hosting SACWA? And maybe are you able to raise more funds from other sources? Or do you rely entirely on the funding by the department? And when you say you are not a public entity, do you mean you are not required to comply with PFMA? those are my questions. And before the chairperson takes over, the minister has requested that he be the first to respond, because he has to leave. And I was here.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the members, the honorable members. Firstly, I want to agree, Chair, that with you and honorable Matingos, that when you get to some of the aspects which have been done, especially by the department, you really need some time. Because some of the things are not out there in the media, as it were. So each time things come, they really come across as new. As I say, that we established this research arm in 2015, so it's 4 years already. But to what extent the broader public know about it, that's another matter. So I agree with that suggestion that we need to find a way of sharing information and exchanging information amongst us. The chair spoke about the strike plan and so on. I think this and others would be important. The second area is the area of the cultural diplomacy program. I hope members did note that the what has been called the Seasons Program. Perhaps I must explain that. The Seasons Program is started in 2012 when the department engaged with other countries. So we'll send a contingent of artists here from across the country, go to another country, stay there. When it started, it was there for a year. So you take artists in South Africa, you take them to France, which was the first country, for a year. They crisscross France, exporting our cultural goods and products in France. By the time they come back, if they knew nothing about South Africa, through this cultural exchange, they would know something. The following year was UK, and so on. So what happens is that when you have South African artists there and creatives, the following year, which was 2013, we had French artists here in South Africa interacting with the community here in South Africa. But because of the financial situation, the year-long program had to be cut. Some instances, the last one, Russia, was what, 6 months? 6 weeks. So you can see it cut drastically because of finances. We then said, no, it's fine, let's have Europe expose our artists and so on, but we have BRICS. Let's look into BRICS. But we have our own continent. Let's look at the Africa as a continent and do this. The last one we had was about 2 months ago, what came, the last one. So what is coming out of the research, because this is one of the programs the department has, what is coming out is that the more you do these exchange programs, the more the country is known in that particular country, and tourism and exchanges grow, which is a positive thing. So you can imagine if we intensify our program here on the continent, all these other things, xenophobia and people who have this ignorance about other Africans, you are going to minimize some of those things and so on. I'm just highlighting that change. Secondly, the issue about the two bills. See, the problem is that if the president, and I hear what members are saying, if the president would wake up today and sign the bill into law, there's going to be a number of people who are going to continue protesting against that. If the president continues not to sign the bill, the voices of people who have wanted it to be signed like yesterday. By the way, Honorable Madingos, people who came during the public hearing are seasoned artists who came and engaged with Parliament. And they are not ignorant people. If I can mention to you some of them, you'd see that they are people who have been in the industry for a very long time, who are leaders in their own right. So it's not a matter of them being ignorant about copyright bills, the IPs, and so on and so forth. The issue, the fact of the matter, is that there is different interpretation of what the president should do. So he will be doomed if he doesn't. He will be doomed if he does, because whatever you're trying to cure, whatever mischief you're trying to cure on copyright, including royalties, is going to be in abeyance, but that doesn't mean that you should look down upon those things people are complaining about, the exploit of their works. They should actually be thought deeply, and as you go forward, you should think about that. But I think, and this is what I said in one event where you were, I think that the industry can find a way to find each other. Because in the final analysis, Parliament has done its job. Whether we were here or not, but Parliament has done its job. What we are doing here is not to open the public hearing, it's just sharing information. Because it has passed, the bus has passed the stop, which is ourselves. It's somewhere else. But I think that the people are going to make things easier for Parliament's sweat, because Parliament went through a process, for Parliament's sweat, for public hearings, for those what you call contributions which were made during public hearings. The people who are going to help all of us is the sector itself. There has to be a way of finding each other from that point of view, and that will help everybody else in the sector, as it were. Because I think that you cannot have a situation where there is a bill and nothing is done about it. The bill is either sent back to be reworked. If it's not in line with the Constitution, it will be sent back. But if it's in line with the Constitution and everything else, ours was to try and assist the process, as I said earlier, on with former Minister Davis. But it was difficult because we were dealing with two people who are in one sect, and very strongly so. Even in the hall, there were caucuses, two distinct caucuses. I said, man, this thing needs these guys. They must solve this thing. So we should encourage the industry, the sector, to get together and find a way where they would agree so that they make things easier for us. Because any one of them, whichever way is taken, is going to be complaining. But ours would want to see something which unifies them. Of course, there are interests and so on, some within the industry and outside of industry. That is given. But I hope and believe that the leaders, because we have leaders in the industry, the leaders in the industry will be able to get people together and come up with a workable solution. It's not impossible. It's very much possible that point can be reached, because you can't have a situation which can't be solved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will respond to some of the questions, and I would appreciate if the team could also respond and elaborate further on some of the questions that have been raised here. In terms of Honourable Member Mr. Ringomadlengozi, would Dr. Shumba perhaps deal with the legislation question that you raised in terms of how deep we have gone. But I think it's quite important to reiterate what he also mentioned when he was presenting, that as SACCO, we have not been commissioned by the department to do research to look deeper into this. But however, we felt it necessary, based on the interactions we've had both with the department and the sector, and due to also the debates that are actually taking place countrywide about the issue of copyright. And we deemed it necessary that people know what copyright law is and how they can actually use it to protect their intellectual property. But I don't want to step on Dr. Shumba's territory. You can respond to that. And in terms of organizers of events, I can't really speak on their behalf and say that they need to be removed and others need to be brought into, but I think it's a discussion that I think the department can actually have with the organizers who are actually applying for funding from the department and asking for financial support and making sure that these events happen. But I think it's also quite noteworthy to mention that one of the reports that we are currently working on, which will be available at the end of December, which will be the third quarter of this financial year, is looking at the role of live music venues in promoting what's actually happening within the music industry. We're wanting to understand, or the department rather wants to understand, whether there is a linkage or relation between the choice of venue and the kind of events that is actually happening. Perhaps some of those issues or concerns that you've actually you're raising will come out there as part of recommendations that the department needs to look into. However, we welcome the comment as the observatory, and perhaps we need to then further engage with the department on whether it should be looked into deeply. And then also the issue of country groups, David, I want you to actually respond to that and explain why I actually mentioned that, why those reports are not available on our website but are somewhere in our database. Honourable Member Njaita, You asked a question about the benefits of international recognition, the benefits of these relationships that we're establishing with the countries that I've mentioned. It's very important for everyone of us here to understand that over and above the department having invited the sector and having discussions about what is it that can be done and trying to understand how the sector is actually, what the makeup of the sector is, but the department also did further to try and understand ways of how they could actually go about in measuring and or establishing an institution that would be responsible for understanding the sector better. They sent a delegation to UNESCO to try and understand further how cultural observatories work. And in one of those meetings, or whilst they were there, they were referred to CINCA, which is a cultural observatory of Argentina. Although there are cultural observatories worldwide, I think everybody almost looks up to CINCA because they are doing exceptionally well. So we were mentored by CINCA as well in establishing this, and there was a relationship that was then established between these two countries, and an agreement that was that came into being that said they would from time to time share notes and just check with us how we're actually doing, how we, what areas do we actually need to, we need assistance in improving what we do, and also some of the challenges that we're experiencing. And I think it goes back to that principle of umuntu ngumuntu ngabantu. We're not claiming ukuthi all that we are doing currently at the observatory is things that we've all thought of on our own. It's important to acknowledge that those relationships contributed greatly in establishing this institution right now that is producing this the policy relevant research that the department is using to make better informed decisions to promote the sector. So those are the benefits, apart from us now mentoring, but we need to acknowledge that we were also mentored, and those people, or those countries rather, still continue to mentor us. And they were here this year, again, in April, as part of the agreement that was signed back then, before I was born. Why the bill? Shumba, all the issues that are related to the bill, I'd like you to actually touch on those. The issue of the suffix, the calculator, the tool, as I've mentioned in my presentation, that we measure the intrinsic value and we measure the economic value of the work that's being done in the sector. And in us trying to understand the intrinsic value, which is a bit complicated but not impossible to understand, and I even made that demonstration using those five themes that have been identified and trying to understand what organizers of this event are actually looking to achieve with this. We then felt that because the issue of the economic, the inclusive economic growth or the economic impact came out shortly throughout our assessment, we felt it was necessary to actually develop something that would help the sector in doing their own economic impact without having to pay for it. We know consultants can charge quite a lot of money in doing something that has been done previously, but maybe copy and paste and then say this is the economic impact I've done for you and you have to pay. And some of these practitioners do not really have the money to actually pay these exorbitant fees, but they actually need to motivate and understand, because I think it goes back to the issue of having to understand, because as an individual or as a practitioner or as a business, you want to understand whether I'm reaping the benefits of what I've actually set out to achieve. So the economic impact calculator serves that purpose for anyone. They can use it, and the beauty about it is that after you've actually put in all the information that it requires you to do, it generates a PDF report for you that you can actually then submit it to whoever needs it for that particular purpose. So you don't just do the economic impact assessment and then end there. It's actually based on the information, so you need to be as honest as possible, because it requires a lot of information, how much you got for funding from the AC or from whoever,
why you are here, how many nights, what kind of accommodation establishment, if you step over, was this the main reason why you actually came to this event, or was it part of something else you were doing, etc. There's a lot that it actually needs you to do, but like I said, there is a manual that practitioners can actually even download for free and understand, but it's not just on our website. We actually go countrywide and train the sector on how to use the tools, and they're actually quite finding it quite useful, and we are still being requested by various practitioners to say, please come and train us, because we need to understand. Some are not so well established, and some are well established. Like, I think it was in 2017 when the Standard Bank of Jazz said, please come and show us how this thing works, because we actually want to understand the economic impact of what we've been doing over the years. Honourable Member Mamabolo, you've asked what has been done. In the beginning, I mentioned that we signed, or the contract was finalised. Well, Honourable Member, sorry, Mama, next to there is Mama.
Mama
Longman. Sorry about that. So you asked what has been done. In the beginning, I mentioned that we got the letter of award in June last year, and the contract was then finalized in September on the 26th. And already we had lost about 5 months into that, what was supposed to be in our first financial year. So we then basically had 7 months to do what was needed to do, and as a result, some of our deliverables, which were scheduled for the first year, were then rolled over to the second year. But we are on track. We haven't missed any targets. So a lot has been done. Some of them have actually touched on it. We've done some policy research papers. We've produced some of the commission research reports that the department has actually requested us to do. We've monitored some of the flagships that they've actually wanted us to do. But perhaps just to touch base on this financial year that we're currently in, we've done a report which the Minister had requested us in April when he came to visit at the Nelson Mandela University, looking at the impact of the language bursaries program. So the department has been funding students who are studying in the field of languages. I think I'm subject to correction. The support has been across six tertiary institutions countrywide, and the Nelson Mandela University was one of them. So he then asked that we actually look into what then happens to these students after they have graduated, and whether there has been any benefit accrued to them, or have their lives changed as a result of them acquiring this these qualifications, which the department has looked into, and we've actually done that. We've done the Maskandi Festival, which I've mentioned. We've also been asked to evaluate the National Book Week, which the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture has been supporting for nearly 10 years now. And we've also been asked to look into the potential of creative cities for regional development in non-metropolitan areas. Those are just some of the few that we've done so far. And there's a whole list that is currently underway, which are due by the end of this financial year. The issue of youth, the honourable member that asked about youth, who is youth? It's people who are under 35. I think that's how we've always and consistently been referring to people who are young. And the budget is over the 70 million is over 5 years. And how much is the Nelson Mandela University getting from that? 15% only, which is regulated, and that goes towards the operational cost of running the project, and the rest of it goes towards producing the research. The other question which was asked, I think I've covered most of these. Perhaps if I've left out anything, especially on the international trade and the country briefs, please they could pitch in, and then my team, if you can actually assist in
in responding to those. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to respond particularly to the country briefs and to the issue of international trade and also the advantages of linking up with other nations. I think the first issue is that in support of the national medium-term strategic framework principle of building a better Africa and a better world, cultural diplomacy, and maybe, Chair, when you do have your strategic session, that we could maybe give you a bit more of a detailed briefing about the importance of cultural diplomacy, not just in terms of advancing economics, but also in terms of building people-to-people relationships. So it's within this context that we draft country briefs. And you'll recall that in the beginning, part of what the minister and the department requires is evidence before they make decisions or they engage with stakeholders. So when we write country briefs, we write a country brief on a particular country that the ministry or the department is going to engage with in a bilateral or a multilateral forum. So generally what we do is we describe very quickly if there's any historical linkages or cultural linkages between us and that particular country. We unpack in detail their cultural and creative economy. Then we go into more sensitive issues, and that's where we unpack how their government operates in terms of culture, what is their policies, how do they put together, how do they work with it. We then look at areas of is there areas of complementarity, is there areas where we can learn from other nations, is there places where they can learn from us. And then the sensitive part is where we look at, is there instances where we may be in competition with each other. What we also do is to assist, and remember this is part of a package that would go to the minister if he goes overseas, that is his team briefs him. This is one of the briefing products that he gets. And then we also profile key decision makers in the industry. So we would say, the minister in Australia is Mr. X, this is his or her CV, this is their interest. So it's not that it is secret, it's just that we don't put it out in public, as it is a product that is used in a very sensitive negotiation by government. But, I mean, we've done 23 of these, and there's quite a lot of data also that maybe in that strategic session we can then also maybe share with you. The last issue then of why engage with other countries is particularly important because it's part of cultural diplomacy in building relationships.
I want to find out if this committee is it part of the public?
Why are you
asking that
question?
Because the honourable speaker, I forgot your name. My question was, why is that briefing termed to be sensitive? And he's saying that there's sensitive information that can be given to the minister, not to the public. So my question is this committee part of public or what?
Can I ask if the Honourable Chair, yes, everything done in Parliament is open to public information that is shared by public. The only reason, Honourable Chair and our members, is that that is not work commissioned by DAC as a debate. It's about other countries who use that information for their purposes. And therefore, then, if you need to publish it, you need to get permission from those countries to say publish that information. Otherwise, they use it for their own purposes. That's why when it is about South Africa's sector, it is on the public domain. We just need to separate the two.
Chair, I just think lastly also the issue is as a continent, if we are going to become more competitive, it's important that we start sharing information, we start building networks, and that is also why these relationships with other and establishing more cultural observatories on the continent is probably going to become more and more important, and that's why we try to establish these links. Also to share resources, because we can benefit a lot from our colleagues all over the continent that have better capacities in certain areas where we lack and vice versa, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other follow-up? Honourable member?
Thank you, Chair. I was not fully answered my question as to you mentioned 35% the success rate was about 35% of the work created by the sector, and I said, are you speaking about the top earners of this whole sector, like the script writers and the film producers who are white, and then the rest? It's like there's no sustainable success there. So I wanted to be clear on that one. Whether is that 35% success rate talking about only the managerial side or just everyone within the sector? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, if I may respond to that.
So the labor market data that we produce is based on the labor force survey, which is essentially done by Status A. So what we do is that we isolate the cultural and creative sector from the National Labor Force Survey. Now, the 35% relates directly to young people who are employed in the sector. So the question that we ask is, of the total 1 million people who are employed in the CPI, what percentage of those are under the age of 35? We isolate that information and then we provided that information. So the 35% is a nationwide number that covers people who are under the age of 35. The job creation total number, meaning of all the 16 million people employed in South Africa today, 1 million are in the CCI sector. So that covers people across all domains and across all racial groups. So the 35% is purely young people.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If we are done with this, there was a question relating to what the department does with the report that comes from SAPO. So I wanted to respond to that. Firstly, we started with the study with the South African film industry, because the question is how do we develop the South African film industry competitive with other industries. We took the research, the commission, SAPO to do the research. From there, we called a stakeholder summit of the people in the film industry last year. And out of that, we then developed a 5-year agenda to say how we're going to develop the South African film industry for the next 5 years. So our APPs are then guided from the research that comes, same as the Artists in School project, where we are sending 340 artists in schools. SAPO went to do a research around that, and currently the implementation of the Artists in School program is based on the recommendations that came from SAPO. We will be looking this year on Uma's Candy Festival, the research that just has been done now, to say how do we replicate that countrywide, given the value and advantages that we've seen from the report. So how do we take that to Polokwane, to other parts, because there's a potential to grow local communities and benefit local municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Adams, Honorable
Thank you, Chair. I just need clarity on attendance under what is SACO. University Act for the SLA signed on the 2nd of September 2019.
Thank you, Honourable Member. That was a typo. If I can just go back to that slide. In fact, I reflected on this presentation I am sharing with the platform today. SAFCO is not a public entity or business as defined in the PSMA. It's a DEC project hosted by the university as per the service level agreement signed on the 26th of September 2018. Yes. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Honourable members, no. No. Okay, if you still want to, it's question three.
Chair, I don't think my answer to the other copy was specifically was answered.
Yeah.
Can you repeat that? Are you still remembering the question?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I thought perhaps maybe you were just taking follow-ups on the issues that have been covered already. But I can proceed here. Maybe let me start with Honourable Mahingos. Which other jurisdictions? Yes, of course, Honourable, of course, America, Singapore, Canada, and others, Israel, I think, looking at that. I would say the trend is sort of to shift towards that trajectory, considering the digital environment. The crux of fair use is to sometimes try and make sure that you kind of leave an open-ended approach to accommodate developments and technology and the like, so that you don't come back all the time. Maybe let me just join also with the question from the Honourable Member. There are indeed safeguards within the legislation, Honourable Mahingos, particularly in Section 12A. One of the key safeguards provided there is that the use must not essentially substitute for your potential market. Of course, the next issue that arises there, that once you have explained it that way, that people always raise that, but that means they have to go to litigation, and that if it's Google, how am I going to take on Google and all that? But the safeguards in terms of are already, fair use being an exception itself, but it's got also limitations to what you can call fair use already outlined in the legislation. Then on the Section 25 one, briefly on the Section 25, it will essentially depend on the wording of the amendment. I would assume that the wording will target expropriation of land. If it is expropriation of property, then of course it will include not only intellectual property but your clothes as well. So I would assume that it will be limited to land. Yet the fair use safeguards are exactly what I think, just trying to explain that they are built in also within Section 12. That deals with that. The other consultation and whether it can still be brought to Parliament are what the Honourable Minister explained before he left. Honourable Chair, thank you.
Let me take this opportunity to thank the Minister, DG, and our important presenter, and all of you. At least now we're starting a department which is new. You know, this new, we need to explain. The department is new to a new members, but departments are not new. Departments were here since 1994. And the amalgamation of departments made that now we're in the merge. But even then, this is a sixth parliament, and there was no other new sixth parliament. And on the other past parliament, we do have records. When the ministers getting in the office, he can't say, when we are asking a question, you know, I'm new in this department, because the information is there. With us, we don't want to assume that the information is there. So also I'm 100% sure that what we have done today was benefited on hearing some things that you were not part of it said. But now today you put us in a good position. What you are saying that we have seen that there is a lot that we are doing, which on a day which is not even a day, we cannot learn, because we are here to learn, being members of parliament, in so many issues that we don't know. So by those words, we are hoping that when we decided a day of our strategic plan, surely we invite you. We do have interest, not only to you as these people are here today, each and every entity, we do call them and we do want to get information in order that we're going to do the oversight to you and to everyone. We can't do the oversight whilst we don't have information on our hands. Mm-hmm. That's the purpose of calling entities. With the arts, we've heard that we've got about 26 entities. So we'll try to check when we're doing our stress plan whether there are those that maybe we cannot call them as time goes in our program, and then feeling that no, we're happy. But your good friends, we still need you. A lot we can learn from you. Today you wanted to go all the way, but unfortunately, if I can't explain now. By those words, I'm thanking everybody who is here, thinking that we'll be working as a team in order that we must build this government of ours. I thank you.
The meeting goes on.
Meeting at 10.
I don't know.